is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm with you today and Wednesday this week. You have no Bertrand this week, so you have a lot of new voices this week. Lots to do on the program today. We're joined now by phone by Jim Dawkey, editor at Chicago NO, and in studio by Catherine Davis, who's a reporter at Chicago NO. I'm going to turn the phone and the microphone on at the same time. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Amy.
Welcome. I'm so glad that you're both here.
Hey, Amy.
Hi. Good. Everybody's here. So, lots happening. For those of you who, like me, Chicago Inno is a regular daily read of yours. You know that there's a ton going on always in our fine city. And so it's always great to have you both with us to talk about those things. I would love to talk about something we heard a little bit about in the newscast just now. And that was about Amazon opening the cashierless stores. That is so fascinating and a little bit 1984-ish at the same time. There's a lot going on there. Talk us through that, if you would.
Yeah, so Amazon Go stores are a concept where patrons don't have to use cash. So they can go, they can scan their phones using the Amazon Go app, grab their food, and leave without going to a register, interacting with any store employees. And so they've just opened the second Amazon Go store here in the Loop. The first one opened back in September. And people can get salads, sandwiches, wraps, Amazon-made meal kits, a variety of things, as well as those, like, you know, traditional convenience store items we're all used to finding in a 7-Eleven. So it's just kind of a convenient way to, you know, have that convenience store experience.
And I mean, where are the log jams in that? Because I know when grocery stores have the, like, cashierless self-checkout, sometimes you see people standing there swearing, going, why won't it scan, like getting mad, or mad that there's no bag, or, you know, mad at something. And I mean, are the same kind of issues being uncovered, or is it more seamless just by virtue of how large Amazon is and how well it can troubleshoot that kind of thing?
Well, when I first wrote about the first store opening here, I was talking to Amazon, and they were saying that people are kind of confused the first time they come to the store. They're not sure how it works. They're like, can I really just leave without, you know?
Right. I would feel like I was stealing something.
Exactly.
Even if I had paid.
And so they have some extra Amazon staff there, on site when the stores first open, just to ensure a seamless experience for people. But, generally, I think people get the hang of it, and it's okay.
Yeah. Jim, what would you add to that?
I think the biggest, you know, sort of issue with this, too, is the technology working, right? They're using some really sophisticated technology to sort of facilitate this whole payment transaction, right? They're using sensors and cameras placed basically throughout the entire store to determine if you've picked something up and put something in your cart and you walk out the door with it. So the issues that you get at your traditional grocery store where you're scanning items yourself, the troubles that you might come across with this new technology are a lot different. So what Amazon has to prove, if it's truly going to go to, you know, potential 3,000 new cashierless stores over the next 5 years, as it's been reported recently, they're going to have to prove that this technology is very good and that people are, you know, actually paying for the items that they walk out with and they're not being overcharged. And so it's still kind of in the early days here with Amazon Go, but very interesting to see that Chicago is a big player in this, right? There's already two in another store coming out of five stores that they've already opened. So Chicago is the first place outside of Seattle to get one of these stores. And we'll see how they kind of grow from here. But Chicago clearly playing a big role in the early days of the new tech.
Another story that's on Chicago NO right now that you can read that's so very interesting and kind of tempting to daydream about a little bit, and that is a Chicago startup that brings hotel-style cleaning to apartment buildings. I mean, I'm a very tidy person, and I tidy up my apartment every single day, so that's kind of exciting to think about, like, hitting a button, and I get home, and it's all clean, and the bed's turned down, and all those things. Talk to me about that.
Right. So Chicago startup The Mint, they're founded in 2017, and in the buildings that they operate in, they have physical buttons on the wall, kind of like those Amazon Dash buttons, if you're familiar with those, and residents can push those whenever they need a cleaning, and they'll get, you know, a housekeeper to come in, and they can tidy up, do bathroom wipe downs, counter wipe downs, all of that, and it starts at about $30 for a one-bedroom apartment.
And so, you know, they're really expanding right now. They are in more than 60 buildings across Chicago, and they recently expanded to Washington, D.C. So it's interesting to see this Chicago startup kind of get, you know, this momentum, and that there's really a market here for a hotel style cleaning.
That's right. And so the whole building has to have buy-in. It can't just be like you, the resident, bringing that to the building. Seems like everybody, the building has to be on board.
Yes.
Not just like one apartment. So you're saying I'd have to convince all of my neighbors to get on board with this.
Right.
What I have to do.
So not quite. So basically the entire, it's offered up to everybody who's in the building, but it's not an amenity per se. So it's not included in your rent. So it is additional. So, you know, if I'm in 1A, 1B doesn't necessarily have to do it as well. So it's offered up to everybody, but the only people who are paying for it kind of are the people who are using it. And it's an interesting service in the sense that, you know, there are competitors. Handy is a very heavily venture-backed, you know, startup throughout the country that provides kind of cleanings on demand within apartments and homes. But the difference kind of between the Mint and a company like Handy is that the Mint's employees are all W-2 workers. They're full-time. They avoid all the issues that you're seeing with these 1099 workers and contract workers. So the Mint, what they say is they get a better cleaning experience, happier employees, and at the end, a better clean for your home.
Lots of interesting stuff, and we're going to continue this conversation with some other stories, because there's more stuff I'm dying to ask you both about. We're going to keep talking with Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno back in just a bit. WGN, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, in for Steve Bertrand today and Wednesday. We got Terry Savage in with you tomorrow. In fact, you got a lot of cool ladies in with you all week long for the Wintrust Business Lunch, so there's that. Now, we are joined right now. We've been talking with Jim Dahlke, editor at Chicago Inno, and Catherine Davis, who's a reporter at Chicago Inno. And Catherine's in studio, and Jim is on the phone with us. And we have been talking about some of the great headlines and stories happening over at Chicago Inno. Like I said in the last segment, if it is, like me, one of your daily reads, you know there's a ton of great information there. And so we love when they come visit and talk to us about them. So I would like to shift a little bit now and talk about how the state of Illinois has this venture capital fund trying to keep startups in the state, which I know is such an interesting conversation. I feel like that touches every part of industry, because there's always this struggle between us in New York or us in LA or wherever to keep business here, because it seems like it's a very good incubator here. And then the next phase often means moving away.
Right, yeah. So the Treasurer's Office announced that starting in 2019, there will be $700 million available in what they're calling the Illinois Growth Innovation Fund. And that's a fund that has kind of an interesting history. It originally started in 2002 with only about $74 million, and now it's grown to, you know, $700 million. And, you know, this really is just a move from the state to ensure that startup companies here have the means to grow. You know, a lot of the reasons that startups leave is because they believe that there's more capital in Silicon Valley or New York. And so this move is a way to be like, no, there's money right here in Illinois. And if you start here and you pledge to grow your company here, then we'll give you this boost, essentially.
Is there a particular sector that this fund is focusing on?
No, actually. When I was talking to the treasurer, he said that they wanted to increase the fund so that they could better diversify their portfolio. So really trying to invest in startups and tech companies from a range of industries, not just one.
I love that. Well, I love any time we can say only 7 million. It's jumped up so much that we can describe something as only. It's a good thing. Jim, what would you add to that?
Well, I would add to this, it's interesting to see that, you know, that we're seeing the startup ecosystem grow in Chicago and in Illinois, and the state government wants to get in on the action, right? They have been investing dollars into some of the most notable companies around town, from Tempest to Uptake to ShipBob to Farmer's Fridge. So these are, you know, the high growth tech startups in Chicago. And, you know, the state of Illinois sees that as an opportunity to make a return on that investment. So curious to kind of see how they continue to deploy those funds. One thing to note, you know, they sort of rely on venture capitalists to pick the company. So it's not necessarily the treasurer sitting here saying who to invest in necessarily. So they kind of rely on local VCs to help make some of those funding decisions. But yeah, certainly interesting to kind of see the state of Illinois want to get in on the startup action in Chicago.
That was my very next question. You've already answered it. And that was, what is the process and who gets this funding and how do we make sure everybody has equal access to it? But I think you've already answered that.
Certainly, yeah. I mean, it's all about a return on that investment, right? And I think that they kind of rely on some of the experts in the field. So kind of interesting to kind of see how the both private and public sectors are sort of coming together on this.
Definitely. Maybe they are benefiting from this, but one startup in Illinois that you have written about recently is a marijuana startup that has raised $100 million in new funding to grow its medical marijuana business, which is an interesting topic. We've talked about it a lot on the Business Lunch on the weekends when I'm regularly hosting about companies that are kind of building and building, waiting for demand to be there here in this state, which is a really interesting thing that it's a huge risk that I think a lot of people are hoping pays off.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So like you said, Cresco Labs, they raised $100 million last week and they've now raised over $185 million to date. So this is, you know, huge, like huge venture-backed company. And they make cannabis products, so smokable products as well as a line of edibles. And, you know, it's just interesting to kind of see, you know, a startup in this space grow so much. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, they're kind of waiting for that opportunity to grow as we see, you know, legislation become more friendly to cannabis. This is something that I think is just going to continue to grow.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting, especially looking at other states and what that's done for them budget-wise, for sure. Well, thank you both, Jim Dahlke, editor at Chicago Inno, and Catherine Davis, reporter at Chicago Inno, for joining us today to talk about all the things. Everybody, head over to Chicago Inno to read the latest for yourselves. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm going to be sure and tweet all these stories out after the broadcast so that you can read them for yourself. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Awesome. Thanks, Amy.
WGN. It's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate you for sharing part of your afternoon with me. Up next on the program, we're joined by phone by Genevieve Park from Google, who is a Google Maps expert, here to talk with us about some of the new features from Google Maps that is aiming to try to help us with our commutes. Genevieve, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for having me.
So talk to me about these new features from Google Maps that are going to help us live much more wonderful lives and have a wonderful stress-free commute and all of those good things.
Yes, that's the hope. So Google Maps released four new features to help you take control of your commute. So we're helping you plan ahead, prepare for those inevitable disruptions that are going to happen, and hopefully even shave time off of your ride by showing you better and faster ways to get to work. And the reason the team developed this is they did a lot of analyzing of commutes over the past 2 years. And what they found is that commutes, I mean, everyone knows this, but they're stressful. But the main reason being that they're long and that really that they're unpredictable. So they pulled this really interesting stat that showed that Americans actually commute for about 2 weeks out of the entire year, which is really painful to think about when you're driving in your car, heading to work, thinking that, oh, I could be laying on a beach somewhere instead.
I was going to say 2 weeks.
And the other stat.
That's your whole vacation,
yes,
right?
That's your whole vacation. Yes, it's a long time. We spend a lot of time in our cars on public transit just getting to work. It's insane. But the second piece was that how unpredictable commutes are is what leads to a lot of the stress too. So nationwide, they saw that commute times could be up to 60% longer than you think it will be when you get in your car. And it's crazy. So if you have an hour commute, you could be driving for an extra 40 minutes due to things like heavy traffic, an accident, road closure, an event. And that's really stressful when you've only allotted that 1 hour to make it to that first meeting or that first call on time. So that's a lot of the why of why the team has decided to develop these features that I'm going to talk about today.
So how do we use these features, and when are they available? Because I'm with you. Sounds good. I'd love to know. You know, yesterday we had the Chicago Marathon here, and I know a lot of people were maneuvering around going, wait, where's this? What street is closed and what time does it reopen and all this? And I think a lot of people were having that very conversation here in Chicago.
Absolutely. So there's a few things we've launched. The first one being a brand new commute tab within the Google Maps app. So with one tap, now you'll be able to see a holistic live view of your entire commute journey. And that's whether you're driving or taking public transit. So you'll be able to know quickly at a glance if it's a normal commute day or if you really need to budget that extra time due to some of those things I talked about, an accident, heavy transit disruption, like a subway delay, or if you should take another route altogether. We'll also send you notifications when these things occur so that hopefully you'll have enough time to adjust your commute strategy. So check out that tab. If you're a transit rider, we have two really cool features that I'm really excited about. So in Chicago, if you take transit, we'll show you exactly where your bus or train is in real time in the map. And so that means that you'll know if you can spend some extra time grabbing coffee, finishing breakfast, or if you really do need to make a run for it to catch your train, because you'll see that, you know, that's the only train that's coming for a while. So you really do need to make it.
That one is very exciting.
I
was going to say that one is very exciting. I know that's a big deal to a lot of commuters trying to time out buses and trains. Please continue.
Yeah, and the thought is really about making this time your own. Like, commutes are not going to be perfect. Google can't take away your commute or take away some of the disruptions that happen, but at least you'll know and you can prepare and you can, and that will take away a lot of the stress that comes along with these rush hour mornings.
Truly, because one of the worst feelings is running up to the bus stop right as the bus takes off. That's a terrible feeling. So it sounds like this would help alleviate
that.
That happens
to me all the time. Yes. Another feature we have is support for multimodal commutes. So this is really cool. I have this type of commute, and I've been commuting this way for years. So I drive to a nearby subway station, I hop on a train, and then I walk the couple last blocks to work. And so now what Google Maps will do is provide helpful information for each leg of your trip. So you'll know if there's traffic on your drive portion, what time your train is expected to leave, and approximately how much time it'll take to walk. So we take the guessing game out of that entire trip with all three modes of transportation so that you'll know exactly what time you'll get to work based on that combination of rides.
And it sounds like there's some integrations with some other apps that are going to be available in Google Maps as well.
Yes. So this is for our driving commuters. So what we've thought about is that if you're going to have to commute, which all of us will have to do, you may as well listen to good music while you're doing it. So we've integrated with Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Play Music so that drivers can control their music or podcast right from the Google Maps app so that they can keep their focus where it needs to be, which is on the road. And Spotify actually has two awesome playlists for your commute. It's the Daily Lift playlist and the Morning Commute playlist, which are both a really great way to start the day.
And so what is the timeline on these? Are these available now? Will these be rolling out to users in different areas at different times?
They are all available globally now on Android and iOS. And to get them, all you need to do is make sure to update your Google Maps app from the App Store or the Play Store, and they should show up.
There you go. Easy enough. Well, Genevieve Park, Google Maps expert, thank you so much for being with us and talking about how to make our commutes a little bit better. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amy.
You bet. All right. So we are going to take a little break, and coming up here in just a bit, Elise Glink is going to join us and talk about another area that is in Amazon's sights. That's all next on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. It's one of the best, but also most unpleasant drinks to be found at bars in Chicago, and we all know it's a staple for city establishments. It's none other than Malort, and in a business way, it's coming home. So even though it's been associated with Chicago for years, Jepson's Malort, a bitter wormwood liquor, has been distilled in Florida for a number of years, but Pilsen-based CH Distillery bought the quintessential Chicago alcohol since the popularity has been growing. In 2011, 2,000 cases were sold, but last year, 10,000 cases of the alcohol were sold around the country. Can't argue with those numbers, and the number of hotels ending the worker strike is growing too. There's only 4 hotels left that are still holding out on contracts for housekeepers, cooks, servers, and others. The importance of these updates is that they impact the larger Chicago business scene, and we're approaching one of the busiest hotel times of the year. And at this rate, it looks like everything will be settled by the holiday season, which is good for everybody. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
WGN, Amy Guthin for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're joined now by Elise Glink, publisher of ThinkGlink.com and the CEO of Best Money Moves, which is an HR app for businesses that helps employees measure their financial stress and then reel it in a little bit. Elise, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's nice to be here, Amy.
Always a pleasure to talk with you. So I want to talk with you today about... It seems like no area of anything that is for sale is sacred to Amazon, and they run a piece of all of it. And real estate now perhaps is no exception. So talk with us about that.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. So Amazon has started to tiptoe its way into residential real estate. We're seeing that Amazon, which is really very, very advanced in delivery of all sorts of consumer products. It started with books, but you can just get about anything you want on Amazon.com. But Amazon seems to have a vision for real estate where they've announced a whole new suite of Alexa-enabled devices for your house, which is one thing. There's an Alexa Fund, which recently acquired Ring, a home security video home security device system, which I actually saw at Home Depot over the weekend. We were there looking for some new appliances and some other things, and I noticed this big, huge display, and front and center, right when you walk through the doors of Home Depot, they've paid to have sort of the marketing space for it. But beyond that, I think Amazon is also going to look at how homes get built, and they are doing deals with Lennar, so that all new homes, Lennar is one of the big home builders in the country, will have an Alexa-enabled lights, smart locks, doorbells, and thermostats.
Which is really, you know, I think it was a big deal when new construction started to have television cables wired up high on the wall, knowing everybody was going to try to mount a flat screen. Even that just seemed like a huge step forward, but this feels like a leap, really.
It is, and it's getting even more. So last month, Yahoo Finance had an all-market summit. They do that every year. And Zillow CEO Spencer Rascoff said that they're expecting Amazon to disrupt the real estate industry. And it isn't just about, you know, selling devices like, you know, Ring devices or other kinds of devices, but it could even be as much as Amazon decided to get into the home building business, where they look at building inexpensive housing units that are small. And think about tiny homes, that sort of phenomenon on HGTV where, you know, people build houses and they're like 200 square feet.
And they somehow manage to not kill each other. That's the part I think is so amazing. You can put 2 or 3people in there.
Do they? But do they really? We don't know that. We just know that by the time the show ends, they seem to like each other. But my guess is 10 minutes after the cameras go away, these people are, you know, they're killing each other their spaces.
Right. But they got the divorce lawyers ready to go offset, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. But it's interesting, you know, Amazon has put up hire a realtor page that sort of went in up on the site, on the Amazon site. So, and while it's come down, you can tell that Amazon is testing these different kinds of pieces of real estate. So there's people who help you buy a house. There's people that help you sell a house. There's all the different services that go into that. And you can see that if Amazon wires up real estate, that, you know, flipping a switch, they could buy companies that are already doing this and then flipping a switch and then suddenly being right in the thick of it. So interesting to watch how they're going to move forward.
That's right. I mean, immediately I'm thinking of the pressure this must put on realtors, on builders, and even on buyers to really be on top of technology. To really, you know, I wonder even if there are concerns about less tech-savvy home buyers.
Well, I think that anybody who's a millennial is tech-savvy enough and then some for all of the different things that are moving out. But what you're seeing is a new interest from VCs in what's being called home tech. So last month, SoftBank, which has apparently limitless billions of dollars, announced a $400 million investment into San Francisco-based Opendoor, which buys and sells homes across 19 different markets. They're going to use the money to open up in a whole bunch of other markets. They will plan on coming to Chicago. That is in their plan. And it basically bypasses realtors. You know, they'll buy your house from you and they're going to turn around and resell it. So you can basically buy and sell houses on demand instead of going through the waiting process. And that is just going to be the death knell, I think, for realtors.
That's right. That'll be really, really interesting to see. Well, thank you so much, Elise Glink, publisher of thinkglink.com and CEO of Best Money Moves. Thanks so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. See you soon.